we thank God that through question and answer, we can actually study the Bible more effectively, especially when we have a need. Just now I talked about need, means that consciously you have a need. Well, actually, you can create a need, isn't it? It could be out of curiosity, right? Or you could be thinking about other people. Do you know when you see someone who is weak or discouraged, you need to read the Bible and to find what else, what could I find in order to feed them, to encourage them, isn't that true? Yeah? I think when you've reached to the age about 19 or to 20, right, you have actually 20 years of experience in life, right? You basically sussed out a lot of things. Maybe you don't actually understand what our age feels like, okay? But you know people younger than yourself, how they feel. You get what I mean? Yeah? Okay? So therefore, it is really good to read the Bible for our sakes and for the church's sake, for our brothers and sisters, right? So, okay. So let's focus, right? So we've discussed chapter 1, verse 12. Chapter 1, verse 12 to 18. Okay. Now let's look at verse 19 to verse 26. 19 to 26. How to have a joyful mind? Well, make up your mind. And apply it there. Now, how do we know this? Well, if you look at verse 19 to verse 26, Paul already talked about the suffering that he's going through, etc., etc. And then when he's talking about that, everything that, you know, God will help him, etc., etc. But deep down, that when he's talking about things, he really hopes that he'd rather be with Jesus, isn't it? If we look at the central verse in verse 23, he says, "For I am hard pressed between the two, having a desire to depart and be with Christ, which is far better. Nevertheless, to remain in the flesh is more needful for." Isn't it true? Yeah? So he's basically decided that my existence, whilst I really want to be in heaven, right? And forget about this place, but there are brothers and sisters that need me. Do you get what I mean? So therefore, to have a joyful mind is to understand that you have a purpose in life. A meaningful purpose. Yeah? I can see actually brothers and sisters who, when their faith begin to grow, it's because they have found a true purpose in life. Right? Some people will be able to find their career path, okay? But others, even though they have a career path, they realize the place to be is the church. The place to exhort all our effort is the church. Because that is going from what? From generation to generation, isn't it? The church is the place where God is going to be glorified from generation to generation. So therefore, if we apply our efforts, focus on our church members, that is a very meaningful one. Right? So if you have been a teacher in the future, you'll be able to work for the kids, and when they grow up to be around 20, 30, or even 40, you'll say, "Wow, thank God, you know, I had a part in that." Isn't that something worth joyful about? Do you get what I mean? The fact that you can see them, that they are actually helping lots more people. We played a small part in helping this person, but this person is helping more people a long life's way. Isn't that really meaningful? Yeah? So I think, you know, let's get out of our little wee box about self-centeredness, and let's go on to be about other-centered, church-centered. Isn't it good? I think it's a really good way of living, because that lasts, isn't it true? That lasts. Your promotion will last a while, and then someone else will maybe even replace you or whatever. Do you know what I mean? Nothing in this world lasts, but the things that you do in church, it will last, it's meaningful. And that is what Paul did. Is that alright? Yeah? Okay, let's continue to read verse 19 to 26. We can see that Paul made up his mind, but also we can see that Paul applied his mind. Why? Let's look at verse 24. See the need, feed the need. He says, nevertheless, to remain in the flesh is more needful for you. Do you know what I did when I was in my early teens, right? In my early teens, and this was during my time when when I was in, I can still remember, right? Do you know in the early days when the computers, you know, start advancing, right? And then you've got the printer and stuff like that, right? At that time, the YCC newsletter didn't exist, right? And it was really funny in my early teens. Actually, YCC didn't even exist then. Right? But I was so jealous. Right? I was seeing lots of Chinese publications, but very few English publications. Do you get what I mean? I saw other newsletters in English to other churches, but nothing coming to us. Just one or two hidden away in the storeroom. Right? And I was like, okay. This is really, really not good. We need something for our church, right? So what did I do? I decided to do my own desktop publishing. I can still remember me trying to, right, let's put this here, design this thing, right? And then the teachings that I got, I just regurgitated and made up this newsletter. Right? Oh, I didn't give out. I was not thick-skinned. But in my heart, right, there was this mission. Okay, there was this mission. So basically, that prepped me for the YCC and the things that we were doing. You know what I mean? Writing all this stuff. And so basically, when you see the need, you feed the need. Right? Do you understand what I mean? Right? So, if, for example, no one is writing on the blog.tgc.org. Right? I set myself a mission to see the need, feed the need. Okay? I see that there was not enough workers, right? Not enough workers. So I decide to volunteer. I'm going to do it. Do you get what I mean? I apply my mind, and guess what? After a while, I have a joyful mind. You see the need, feed the need. You feel dead useful. You get what I mean? You feel really useful. It's not because you're useful, you're so great. No. You feel useful. You get what I mean? Right? So what I'm trying to explain to you, if you want to have a joyful mind, make up your mind, right, and apply it there. Have a purpose, a meaningful one, and see the need and feed the need. Okay? It may be that you want to increase in Bible knowledge and to learn to think of a way how to encourage brothers and sisters. Right? You see that there's one generation is going to the next generation, so you want to strengthen them. You need to think about what you need to do to them, how you need to get close to them, form a bond so that you respect them, they respect you. And do you know what I mean? You see the need, you feed the need, and then there is progress. Understand? Yeah? And then you will find that you have a joyful mind, because not only will you be able to see that you're doing something meaningful, but you'll see the result as well. Yeah? Isn't that a good way of living? I think it's pretty good, right? Yeah? And that's why I encourage you all to serve the Lord. Okay, let's come to Philippians chapter 1. Chapter 1, let's look at verse 27 to verse 30. Verse 27 to verse 30, right? How to have a joyful mind? How to have a joyful mind? In it, together, striving together. Isn't it true? Paul never felt lonely. Of course, you understand Jesus was with him. He never felt lonely. Why? Because people like Timothy, Titus, and Silas, they were his co-workers working together, striving for the same purpose. He never felt alone, right? But also, when he had brothers and sisters believing in the same thing, yeah, knowing that they are in the same boat and they're striving together, isn't that something worth joyful about? Isn't it true? Isn't it true? Yeah? If I ask the brothers and sisters in Newcastle, right? This YTTC, preparation for the YT, was it difficult? Was it difficult? It's horrendous, isn't it true? It's 150, 60 people, plus, right? But when we're in it together, everyone do their part, isn't that something joyful about? Isn't it true? It's joyful. I mean, as I said to us, someone says it's early days yet, but I said, I think they've pulled it off. I think they've pulled it off. By God's grace, I think they've pulled it off. You think pull it off is like easy, isn't it? No. When you pull something off, it means that you give a lot of effort, extend a lot of effort and thought and communication and clarifying things and suggestions and filtering. That takes a lot of effort. That's a big, massive headache, isn't it true? Right? But when you realize you're in it together, striving together to fulfill a goal, right? That is something worth joyful about, isn't it? Yeah? So one thing is quite good is that we need to build teams. Yeah? Build teams. Now, these teams is not just about doing things, but having a mission. We need to fulfill the mission. Okay? It could be your EPG work, right? It could be your EPG team. It could be your YCC team. It doesn't matter. But when you know you're in it together, you're praying for one purpose, and you're doing, striving your best, okay? You're really doing your best with your limited time, limited space, limited resources. You're trying your best. Everyone is having the same mind to get this done, and let's do the best of our ability. Isn't that something worth joyful about? Isn't it true? Yeah? So I think that this is actually a really good thing. I think Paul was a fantastic team player. He was a captain, but he was a team player, wasn't he? He was absolutely a team player. And so therefore, when he worked with other co-workers like Apollos, he would say, when he couldn't do something, he asked Apollos to do it. Do you know what I mean? They're working together, isn't it? In it together, striving together, right? So when he go to a certain place, he asked Timothy, can you go? He said, yeah, I'll do it. I'll do it out of my own initiative, right? So Timothy Paul was really happy because he had people around him in it together, striving together. That's a very joyful mind, isn't it true? Knowing that other people are actually doing the same work. And this is something I reflect upon. Do you know, every 2 years in the church we've got a World Delegates Conference, right? And thank God, under IA there is a team called IYM. Right? IYM is the International Youth Ministry. So we have people from UK, myself and others, right? And then we have people from USA, and then we have people from Malaysia, Singapore, Indonesia, da, 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 right? When we come together, we actually remind ourselves we're in it together, striving together for the same goals. Do you know what I mean? Actually, we are all workers as well. But when you think about it, other people are also really busy as well, committed, striving for the same goal for the youth. That really is encouraging. You get what I mean? Yeah? So what I'm trying to say is to you, if you belong to an RE class, right, and this is something we need to pass on to others, yeah, we need to set up a culture in it together, striving together. That's really something we need to do, especially when some things take time to build up. Changing the youth mentality, for example, encouraging the youth to serve, right, encouraging the spirit of initiative. That takes a while, isn't it true? But once you've sorted that out, once you've invested that is something to go ka-ching about, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? Because you know that God is working in them now. You don't have to push them. They're going to pull you. Hopefully not. But do you get what I mean? Yeah? So that is a very good message, I find, from Philippians, to be a joyful mind, verse 27 to verse 30, isn't it? So you realize that when you are in pain, other people are in pain as well. When he can endure pain, I can endure as well. I must endure because he's suffering too. So we do it together. You get what I mean? I think that's a good mind. Yeah. Okay, let's go to chapter 2. Chapter 2. chapter 2, verse 1 to 4. A joyful mind is a healthy mind. Open mind. Yeah? Basically, from verse 2 to verse 4, it tells us what kind of mentality we should have in order to have a joyful mind, isn't it? Let's take a few examples. If there's any consolation, if there's any consolation, if any comfort of love, if any fellowship of the Spirit, if any affection and mercy, fulfill my joy by being like-minded, having the same love, being one accord of one mind, right? So this means that Paul was saying to them, right? When you notice something, right, something good in a small group of people in the church, right, you say, oh, you see they are behaving like this towards other people, right? They say, ah, you also be like that to one another. Okay? A healthy mind, open mind, looks for good things that are going on. Do you know what I mean? Any Tom, Dick, and Harry can pick bones and notice mistakes and faults and weaknesses, But maybe not many people will see good things. Good things brought to mind will encourage people more. Isn't it true? If a person always criticize, always complain, I think you sooner or later you get fed up, isn't it? Right? People may become discouraged. So when you stop complaining and notice more of the good things and feed the brother and sister's mind with good things, the way we should be, the way other people are, that what you notice, and the way we should be here, that is really good, isn't it true? Emphasize the positive, the way we should be. And I think the whole team will do differently, isn't it true? Yeah? A healthy mind, open mind, doesn't look at themselves, it looks at other people. It doesn't look too highly upon themselves, yeah, but regards other people highly, respect others, okay? Does not look at your own interest, but the interest of other people. So a healthy mind and open mind always thinks about, this is me here, this is the other, right? Do you know, let's begin with the older generation, right? Older generation, we may say, oh, they are older. That means they are not so, maybe not so fashionable, or maybe language and stuff like that. Jeremy, right? I challenge you, okay? Can anyone tell me, what's anything good about older people? Apart from more experience, what's about the older people? Do you know anything about the older people in the church, in your own church? You may say, oh, they're just our parents. What are the things that you can see? Good things about them that you can show respect to them. You think about it. Older generation have been in the church longer than we have, isn't it true? Uh-huh. Where do we get this building from? Where do we get the funds to feed the preachers? So that the preachers can do the work of God. Where did they all come from? Isn't it come from an older generation? They work hard for their living and they sacrifice a portion to do God's work, isn't it? Maybe they're not so eloquent in preaching and stuff like that. Maybe they don't know the Bible so well. But they sacrificed whatever they could, and together they have done a very good job. Isn't that deserve respect? Yeah? I mean, even though they are nagging, yeah? Why do they nag? It's for our own good, isn't it true? Do you know what I mean? Yeah? So, what I'm trying to say is to you, healthy mind, open mind is other-centered. Seeing other people in a different light so actually you can respect them. Okay? I think many of us as youth, okay, we have this preconcept and this. There's some people above our eye line that we look up to, right? But there's some people below our eye line and we look down on. Really? Yeah? There are some people we would be drawn to, and there are some people we just pass by, don't notice. Isn't it true? Yeah, I'm just exaggerating the feeling, just to let you see if you're doing that. Do you get what I mean? Yeah? And so you realize that a healthy mind, open mind, notices other people, and can learn from other people. It's not self-centered, it's other-centered. Isn't that a joyful mind? Yeah? Where are you? When are you the most joyful? It's when you're learning, isn't it true? You learn something new. Yeah? When you learn something new. When you learn that other people actually have something you don't have. That is a very joyful mind, you know? Yeah? So in my ministry, it's a very thankful thing. When I notice, whether in the youth or in the older generation, it doesn't matter. You notice something special in individuals, right? And you know, when I was reading your assignments, there are little bits and pieces. I thought, I can see the light of this person. Some very good characteristics. Very open, very honest, willing to share, willing to testify of God's grace. Isn't that a very good thing? Yeah? So that means that for me, this person deserves my respect, because really they have shown that they have given their best. Maybe their handwriting is tremendously hard to read, right? Maybe their grammar is not so great, but actually, in essence, you can actually get things from it. Isn't it true? Yeah? Isn't that a joyful mind? I think it's a beautiful, healthy mind, open mind. Do you have a healthy mind, open mind? Or are you squashed in that really narrow thinking, self-centered, pea-sized brain of yours? Sorry. Or do you want it to expand and allow the Big Bang to go along? Open the big wide universe. The world is bigger than you. Okay? Let's go to Philippians. Attitude towards other people is actually plays a lot in whether you have a joyful mind or not. Renew your attitude, you'll realize that life can be a lot different. Okay? Let's turn to Philippians chapter 2. Philippians chapter 2, chapter 2, verse 5 to verse 30. Sorry, this is not where I'm fast forwarding. Suddenly a big massive chunk, and then I'm going finish. Right? So, a joyful mind is a what mind? It's a humble mind. A mind of humility. Okay? So if you look at verse 5 to verse 11, it's talking about Jesus. And verse 12 to verse 18. Right? That's a separate paragraph. But if you look at verse 19 to verse 24, talking about Timothy. And then chapter 3, or 2, I beg your pardon. Chapter 2, verse 25 to verse 30 is about a person called Epaphroditus. Okay? Epaphroditus. Three examples, right? A joyful mind is a humble mind, right? Do you know, one of the things is that it's natural tendency to grow with pride and lead life with pride, okay? Want to be the individual, exert the self, right? But actually, that in itself is not a very joyful way of life, because when you exert yourself and want to be seen, then most people will see you are quite arrogant, isn't it true? It could be interpreted as arrogant. So, but a person who learns to be humble, seemingly they are not noticed, but actually definitely they are noticed by who? By God, isn't it true? Yeah? So we can see Jesus, right? The more he hid himself away, not only that God noticed him, right? But Jesus as a son of man became a servant. Servant, right? He was so special because he was servant that not only that everyone noticed him, right? But even God lifted him up high. Isn't it? So today, a joyful mind is a humble mind. If you're willing to serve others, right? That's really good. Why? Because if you're willing to humble yourself and to serve others, then basically you're thinking upon these lines, okay? Verse 6. Jesus obviously did not look out for his own interest. He looked out for the interest of other people, isn't it true? Okay? And in doing so, even though he was equal with God, right? Right? And people didn't respect him to be the Son of God. Did Jesus become resentful to these people? No, isn't it? Yeah? So today, brothers and sisters, if you have been appointed to do God's work, maybe you become a team leader, right? Maybe the young people don't respect you, right? As much as you want. Do you know what I mean? Don't be resentful. Why? Even though you deserve to be respected. You get what I mean? Don't, because of immaturity, affect your love towards them. Yeah? Don't forget, you are servant. If Jesus did not become resentful to the people who didn't treat him as a son of God, equal with God, right? Jesus kept quiet. It's okay. Do you know what I mean? Then that is why Jesus could continue to love others and give his life for people. So in the future, if you are a team leader for NSSC, then that's the way you should think. Yeah? Okay, let's look at verse 7. Chapter 2, verse 7. The problem is when we want reputation. Who wants a horrible reputation, isn't it? Of course, reputation, good or bad, is up to you. Isn't it true? But sometimes when you have done nothing wrong and you seem to have earned a bad reputation, for example, right? Yeah? Just like Jesus did. He did nothing wrong. He earned a bad reputation. Then why could he continue? Well, if we look at verse 7, it's because he made on himself of no reputation. Do you get what I mean? So before he came into this world, he said to himself, I'm nobody. Yeah? If you are a nobody and someone makes your reputation into pretty bad, well, at least he notices me, isn't it? Do you get what I mean? Yeah? But if you're a nobody, and people say something bad about you, even though there was a misunderstanding or whatever, you're not going to fret about it because you're nobody. Do you get what I mean? It's because you think you are somebody. That is why you're so hung up on what people say or do, right? Have you heard of the expression? If someone says something, no, just go over my head. Do you get what I mean? Some people can do that, isn't it? Why? Because they don't care. Come on, man. The work is about the work. It's not about the reputation. Yeah? So in verse 7 and 8, there's a transition, which means that in verse 8, it says that being found in appearance as a man. So therefore, verse 7 tells you this is what Jesus did before he came into this world. Isn't it true? Can you see that? Read verse 8. Read verse 8, everybody. 1, 2, 3, go. And being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient to the point of death, even the death of the cross. Isn't that true? Okay? So being found in appearance as a man, so therefore before he came as a man, yeah, he actually made himself of no reputation, a reputation. Actually, Jesus had the highest reputation, isn't that true, in heaven? Because at the end of it, he was the Most High God. All glory be unto him. All the angels respected him. Isn't it true? Right? And so when he came into this world, he was so dismissed by other people. Right? Bad mouthed by many people. But Jesus wasn't bothered. Why? Because he already made himself of no reputation. Yeah? Okay, let's look at verse 8. A person who is humble, yeah, is a person who is obedient. And this is the most important thing to them. A humble person is an obedient person. Because what matters to them the most is whether I'm obedient to God or not. Whether I'm doing the right thing or not. It doesn't matter what people might say. the most obedient, most important is that, am I obedient? Okay? The fantastic feeling is that when you're actually able to do God's will, people may not appreciate it. Inside your heart, you have a clear conscience and you have a joy that you're free from all these emotional entanglements, consideration of how people will see you or remember you or not. When you're free from all that and you can still do the right thing, that is a thing to be joyful about, isn't it true? It's a thing to be joyful about, right? So, of course, when we look at verse 9 to verse 11, Jesus indeed was truly exalted. Why? Because he humbled himself, therefore he was exalted. Isn't it true? Yeah? So today, as a Christian, we need to strive for humility, because the more humble we become, the higher that Jesus will lift us up in the future. Yeah? What verses in James, in 1 Peter, do we remember how that is how God will deal with us? If we're humble, then God will exalt us. Anybody? Of course, we know in James chapter 1. Yeah, he will humble himself, God will give grace to the humble. And then 1 Peter also, right? Most of the time, if you're doing a wee practice sermon, you probably quote these verses because you've read it day in, day out, year in, year out, for so many years. If there's no other Bible verses you know, at least you know this one. Tell me.
James.
Yes. Chapter 4, verse 6. And then chapter what? Chapter 5, verse 5 and 6. Yeah. 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 5 and 6. Okay. Of course, when we come to the parable of the prayer of the Pharisee and the tax collector, in the Gospel according to Luke, right, we remember that in verse 14 it tells us, Jesus says, I tell you, this man went down to his house justified rather, for everyone who exalts himself will be humbled. He who humbles himself will be exalted, right? So you can see all these verses go to the same point, encouraging us to humble ourselves, just like Jesus was, and then we'll be exalted. So the gospel is centered upon Jesus. If you believe Jesus humbled himself and he was raised the Most High, then if you follow in his footsteps of being humble, just like what I outlined to you, then you also will be exalted in the future, okay? I think that's a good thing to look forward to. Right, let's turn back to Philippians. Philippians, let's skip the middle bit. Verse 2 to 18. Let's go to verse 19 to verse 24. Right? Now, verse 19 to 24, of course we know a bit of history about Timothy, because Timothy was a very zealous Christian. He was a youth. But when Paul went to minister, and then he noticed, and probably someone says to him, you know, Timothy, you know, you should get him to join your team because he'll be good for the ministry. Okay, so Timothy worked with Paul, and the thing is that Timothy actually matured. Okay, in that, in verse 20, he began to sincerely care for the believers, just like Paul did, right? And I think it's not easy for a youth to do that, isn't it true? Yeah? Is it easy for youth to forego their pleasures or forego their own dreams in life? Is it easy? It's not easy, isn't it? Right? When they stop thinking, not too emphasizing their own career and concentrate on the church. That takes a different mindset, isn't it? It means that they're willing to humble in the will of God. Okay? As a young person, rather to be a servant in the church. Okay, I need to care for these people. Right? Of course, you may say, oh, there are so many RE teachers. Right? Just like Paul. Ah, there are many teachers, but not many fathers. Isn't that true? Jeremy. There are many RE teachers, but not every RE teacher care in the same way that they should. Do you get what I mean? So Timothy is a person who is very humble. He humbled himself that it takes more to care for someone. So therefore, I humble myself, right? And I need to give off those things I could look, I want, but I need to look after these people. Okay? Let's look at verse 21. Timothy was humble in two aspects. Yeah? Timothy was humble in two aspects. One, when he was sent, he would go. Isn't it? Verse 23. When he was sent, he would go. Secondly, his humility is because he learned how to learn from the older generation. Verse 22. So today, if you are humble, then you were willing to learn from each other and the older generation. Of course, the younger generation too, right? But I think it is really quite good. If you have this mindset, I can learn from the older generation, then it proves that you have a certain degree, a certain level of humility. Because usually young people will dismiss the older generation. Oh, they don't know how to do this, don't know how to do that. Do you know the younger generation, for them to learn computers, is it easy? Is it easy? It's not, isn't it? We just go with like duck to water, once assignment finished. Right? We can finish it like that. Right? But for example, my father's generation. You know, my father's generation. You know? It's a headache for them. You know, recently the General Assembly, we have a revamp, right? And so they have to learn to use their mobile phone, internet, have Google Drive, the documents, know how to do the spreadsheets, put in the forms, and then come up with the result, so that compile report. Oh, my dad's generation is getting really high tech, man. Better than you guys, probably. You don't know what to do. But it takes a lot of effort for them, isn't it true? It takes a lot of effort for them, right? So if an older generation in the church asks you to help them, you should do so, especially when it's to do with church work. You get what I mean? Yeah? I think it's good if you take the initiative. Can I help you with your computer when you're doing church work? What else can I do for you? Do you know what I mean? Yeah? If you explain to them patiently, then when you yourself get to my age or hope people older than you, right? Don't say never, right? There will be some things you need the help of the younger generation. I'm telling you, it's so true. Now I'm 42. Right? There's some things I just can't understand. Right? About techie and stuff. So I need the older, younger generation to help. Yeah? Do you get what I mean? It does take a bit of a humble attitude to realize that that person deserves my respect. Even though they're not so savvy, their heart is there. Do you know many of the older generation, for example, the church needs to be more computerized so every organization is better, right? Do you know what they do? They go out and buy their own computers from their own pockets, right? You may say, oh, they've got plenty anyway, but that's not the point, isn't it true? They already gave up their time and they take from their own pockets to add to the church of God. Did you get what I mean? I think that deserves respect, isn't it true? Yeah? So what I'm trying to say to you anyway is that if you're willing to give whatever it takes, then you have this kind of a mind of humility, just like Timothy. Okay, let's go to chapter 2, verse 25 to verse 30. Philippians chapter 2, verse 25 to verse 30 is about a person called Epaphroditus, right? Now, Epaphroditus, we can say he was humble. Why? Because basically he was just a messenger, right? He was a courier. Yeah. Do you know, if I was asked you, give your card, right? Give your card and get you to, if pretend there's no email and stuff, right? Get you to drive from Elgin, right, to London, and pass a message on from me to go down to London members, would you do it? You says, How long does it take to drive from Elgin to London? Anyone tried it? I haven't, definitely not. Right, let's piece it together. Elgin to Edinburgh, how long? 5 hours. 4 hours, okay, I say 4 hours. Okay. Not speeding, not killing yourself, 5 hours, safe. Okay. With breaks in between. Right, how about from Edinburgh to Newcastle? How long?
Two.
Crazy, you drive so fast, man. 2 hours. That's a lot too fast, man. 3 hours. Okay. That's too fast. Okay. And then from what's it? From Newcastle down to Leeds is 1.5, right? So further down, probably another 3-4 hours, right? So all the way down, it's going to take how many? It'll take you probably about better half of a day. Let's say 12 hours. Just be on the safe side. From Elgin to London, that's driving. You get what I mean? Driving. Now let's change the scene. Let's go by horseback. Right, horseback. Okay, no, let's go by pony. Pony Express. Right, okay, let's not go by pony, let's go by boat. Right, hand of the sail. And also walking. Do you get what I mean? Right, add it that there could be bandits, add that there could be trouble, thieves, okay, along the way. Add the fact that you might not be able to spend a night in the hotel, right? Because everything's filled up, for example. You might end up having to sleep in the streets, right? End up that you have to be very careful what's running out. Jeremy, now think about it. Doesn't it take a humble mind to do such work? If you were going to send your own word, right? You've written a fantastic letter to the Corinthians, for example, to the Philippians. So many, and you want everyone to know. You would carry, isn't it true? But now you're taking someone else's word and passing it to other people. Yeah? But Epaphroditus, he knows his position. It's not a matter of high or low. Yeah? Does Paul see himself as higher and Epaphroditus as lower? No. Epaphroditus is part of the body of Christ. Paul is part of the body of Christ. Each one is doing their part. I wonder where that phrase comes from. Ephesians, remember? Ephesians chapter 4. Yeah? So basically what I'm trying to say is to you, right? You do your part. I do my part. They do their part. Everyone do their part. Just humble yourself. Just get on with it. Do your part. Stop complaining. Stop being uncertain. Stop being afraid. Just go and do it. Pay the price. Let's push the work of God forward. So we can see here that Epaphroditus was a very humble person. Why? Because for the sake of God, he himself almost lost his life. And how do we do it to say this? But let's look at verse 30. Let's read together. Verse 30. 1, 2, 3, go. Yeah? For the work of Christ, he came close to death. Let's look at verse 26. Verse 26. 1, 2, 3, go. Since he was longing for you, and what? Since he was longing for you all, and was distressed because you had heard that he was sick. Right? So therefore, from verse 26 and verse 30, we realize that, yes, he might have been healthy, but not all the time. There was time he suffered sickness, and also even to the point of death. Only when a person has humbled themselves, even though they suffer, they will still carry on. Because why? Let's look at verse 25. This is really beautiful because everything ties up, right? Because Epaphroditus was, he saw the need and fed the need. Isn't it true? Isn't it true? He saw the need and fed the need. How do we know this? He says, fellow soldier, but your messenger and the one who ministered to my need. He saw the need that the Philippians needs to be encouraged. Paul wanted to encourage the Philippians, Epaphroditus wanted the Philippians to be encouraged, so Epaphroditus knew that the words that that Paul wrote would encourage the Philippians, so therefore he fed the need by willing him to be the courier, the messenger, the postman, to take Paul's words to the church in Philippi. But not only that, he knew that Paul, being a hard worker, he saw that Paul had a need. So therefore, Epaphroditus was a person who worked for his own life, okay, because he needed to feed himself. But actually, he was working to feed Paul as well, in order for Paul to concentrate on to do God's work. Isn't that quite good? Yeah? So you can see here that actually Epaphroditus was a very, very selfless person. Very selfless person. The more selfless you are, the more needs you can see. Isn't it true? Because the more selfish you are, you can only see your own needs. But the more selfless you are, the more of other people's needs you can see. And you'll find that you'll become very useful. Just like Epaphroditus. Truly, truly, he humbled himself. But Paul said in verse 29, this kind of people should be held in esteem. You should respect such people. You can learn a lot from these people. So can we understand about Epaphroditus? He was a humble person. And we can understand from Timothy, he was a very humble youth. And obviously from Jesus Christ our Lord, being the Most High King, he humbled himself as a servant. And that's what we should be. And if we do this, you find that, you know, it's a really joyful way of thinking. Yeah. For me, personally speaking, I do acknowledge that there's a certain pride in my mind in the past. There still is some, okay? But the fact is that the more humble you become, the more, how should I say, the lower that you lower yourself, you actually, your mind is a bit more healthier. You know what I mean? And you become less resentful and more put yourself forward, that kind of thing. Yeah? And you realize that you can actually face a more challenges for God. Okay? So a humble mind is a joyful mind. I think that's pretty useful instructions from the Bible. Okay, let's bow our heads and start the prayer. Amen. Okay, so can I have the, where's the...